So today and for the rest of March, we're hoping our opening segment makes you really hungry because we're smack dab in the middle of Jersey Mike's Subs Month of Giving. And on our way to the company's March 25th Day of Giving, where 100% of proceeds in every Jersey Mike's Subs store is going to a local charity. We'll talk more about this 10-year-old corporate philanthropic initiative, as well as welcoming a spokesperson from Make-A-Wish Connecticut, one of the primary recipients from this year's and past Jersey Mike's giving campaigns. Then we're going to be looking for veterans and the folks who love them, because the Regional Workforce Development Agency, The Workplace, has just launched applications for a couple of new programs to help retrain or hook veterans up to situations working for clean, high-paying, and secure advanced manufacturing companies and other career positions through the latest generation of Workplace's Platform to Employment Initiative. And since National Poison Prevention Week is March 15th through the 21st, we'll close talking with a representative of Safe Kids Worldwide that just released a report titled Keeping Kids Safe Around Medicine, Insights and Implications. You know, 5 children are sent to emergency rooms every hour, and sadly, a number of these accidents are fatal. So with more and more prescription medications making their way into homes, it's imperative families take necessary precautions, and we'll share those and a few other key points from this important report. Well, we want to remind you that the current COVID-19 situation may impact any activities promoted on our program. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Hey, if you're willing to take a stand against domestic violence, would you be willing to walk a mile in the shoes of a victim? On April 25th at 8 a.m., join more than 1,000 expected supporters for the 8th annual Center for Family Justice Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event. For over 120 years, this agency has worked providing free, confidential, bilingual crisis services that help all people impacted by domestic violence, sexual violence, and child abuse restore their lives. The walk starts at the Fairfield train station and ends at Old Town Hall with a brief award ceremony. To learn more about the center, how to get help, and to register for the walk, visit centerforfamilyjustice.org. Well, as I wipe the fantastic trappings of the Italian combo from Jersey Mike's that I just ate, courtesy of Mitch Thompson, off of my lips here, I will welcome Mitch back to the program. Mitch is a spokesperson for Jersey Mike's, and we are into the Jersey Mike's 10th annual Month of Giving, where the company is hoping to raise a record-breaking amount for charity this March. Jersey Mike's Subs, known for their authentic, fresh-sliced, and fresh-grilled subs, are asking customers to eat a sub and help a local cause. And with that in mind, we also want to remind you that along with the giving that's going on all March, on March 25th, it is the Day of Giving for Jersey Mike's, where 100% of sales fund local charities. And we're going to talk more about that. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Real excited to be here and talk a little bit about what we got going on this month.
So 10 years strong, you guys have had to have given up a huge amount of money, not just here in Connecticut, but countrywide from all the Jersey Mike's that are participating.
Yeah, it's... We don't really think of it as giving up money as much as, you know, just kind of doing our part in our local communities. It's something we feel strongly about. It's something we all really get behind and get excited about. It actually all started with a franchisee doing it in his local market, and our founder caught word of it and said, hey, we're doing this everywhere. So it actually all started with a franchisee, and now we all just rally behind it, and we think it's a great idea and a great opportunity to let the communities that we, you know, do business in, you know, really support them.
So to the extent that you can tell us, give us a few ideas of the numbers. How many restaurants participating, or how many locations participating this year, and up to now, or at least in the last year or so, how much has been raised and paid forward to giving organizations in our communities?
You know, as it sits today, we're about 1,700 locations countrywide. We all participate in it. We've raised over $8 million to date, I believe, throughout these stores. It's obviously catching more traction as years go on. You know, as a company, we should be breaking $3, $4 million this year alone. Locally, you know, last year we raised just under $90,000 for Make-A-Wish. in our local markets. And it's pretty extraordinary how much money we can raise if we put a little effort into it. And with your help, we're really hoping to push that bar.
Great. Tell us then how it all works and what's the difference between the type of donations that are being raised during the month of giving versus the day of giving?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, all month long, we're asking customers to come in and help us raise money. There's a roundup feature at the register. So, you know, you take that extra 6 cents and it all goes back to Make-A-Wish and in my stores and other local charities. We're also doing matching donations. So you donate $1, your next visit, you get $1 off. $3 gets you a coupon for a free chip and drink in any of our locations. And a $5 will get you a buy one, get one regular sandwich your next visit. So we're really matching all your donations with food offerings. We're just asking that you come out and support us. Whereas on the day of giving, every penny spent in our stores will be going out to local charities. So 100% of sales, not profits. It's literally 100% of sales. It's kind of unheard of, but it's what we feel is necessary to really make an impact on our communities.
Yeah, that, you know, I have to say that really does seem like the way to do it, because I have always been not suspect, but questioning when so many good vendors, not just restaurants, but retailers and others, when they say they're going to have something that is either open-ended or even happening within a defined time period, and they say that they're going to donate a 10% or 50% of proceeds, because at that point, you can't really see the end of it. You can't see where you as the customer are providing a pass-through that has some sort of definitive ending. So I really think being able to just say, in this one day, it's 100%, plus for the whole rest of the month, there's all this added gravy.
Yeah, it's, you know, we partner up with great charities. It's, you know, all vetted by the franchisees. I think that really keeps us honest. It's not just our word. You know, you can reach out to these organizations that we're working with and see how impactful we've been on their organizations. And they love talking about what we're doing for them. Yes, it's 1 month, but you know, a lot of our franchises partner up with these organizations year long. You know, this is kind of one of the big events that you guys all hear about, but as an organization, you know, we're doing charitable acts and donating tons of profits to all these organizations all year long. So they're more than happy to talk to you and answer any questions.
So did I understand correctly that the Make-A-Wish is kind of like a universal recipient for the entire campaign, and then each local store can select an additional philanthropic recipient?
Make-A-Wish is a choice that I choose. We do use them in lots of states, but like I said, every franchise group gets to choose who they're going to do their donations with. So we really, as a company, want, you know, our staffs and our owners to, you know, feel a sense of connection with the charities. It's, we feel we raise more money when there's a, you know, a personal touch to it, and we really get behind the charity groups. You know, here, you know, growing up in New Jersey, that's where Make-A-Wish started, and then moving up to Connecticut about 4 years ago and you know, opening up my businesses, I've always found a strong connection. You know, we actually have two Make-A-Wish recipients that work for us. So that's like another a little kickback. We're actually, sure, you know, have kids that are coming up through the programs that are now working in our organization. We think that's going to grow, you know, as we're building relationships and partnership with Make-A-Wish. We're going to hopefully, you know, be granting them wishes and then, you know, creating a platform for them to create careers with us and really, you know, get to that next level of living with us. So that's kind of been like a little extra on top that we didn't even realize we were going to get out of it. That's now fantastic. Some of our best employees actually are coming through the program that we've donated money to.
Yeah. Can, if not for your group, have you heard of some of the other types of charities or charity initiatives that other groups or restaurants are utilizing as recipients?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak more locally, but, you know, I know here in Branford and Guilford, a franchisee's been working with Take a Vet Fishing. He's a really strong component of our local veterans. And they're doing blood research, ALS, cystic fibrosis. I mean, you name it, cure for cancers for kids with cancers and scholarship funds. So it's really widespread throughout the area. But I think the Ice Bucket Challenge for ALS. There's a lot of people, you know, sure. Freight's just passed away recently. So, you know, they're really making a big push to keep his legacy and all that he's accomplished in his lifetime alive. So a lot of our Boston and you know, Northern New England markets are really stepping behind them. It's a great organization. So I think you find you can't really go wrong with the organizations we're choosing. You're going to eat, and to know that every penny is going to go back to charity, I think it makes it to be a no-brainer.
Great. I guess there's also an added incentive for people to be following Jersey Mike Subs on Twitter or being part of the email club because they're actually privy to special promotions and deals.
Yeah, I mean, all of our organizations have been running ads for, you know, buy one subs, get one free, and discount rates. We're really just trying to get customers in the door to help raise our donations. All over our Facebook, our Instagram, you know, like you mentioned, our Twitter, our email clubs, text messages. We're really going to be sending out blasts to let everybody know what we're doing and try to invite you in to come get a great lunch and do good in your communities.
Well, across the country, a substantial number of charities have benefited, and we're going to be talking with some folks from Make-A-Wish in just a moment. But before we switch to meet Kim Smith on the phone from Make-A-Wish Connecticut, Mitch Thompson from Jersey Mike Subs, once again, remind people who may have joined us late everything they need to know about the month of giving we're in right now and the day of giving for Jersey Mike Subs that's coming up on March 25th.
Yeah, quick recap. Supporting lots of local charities. My locations are partnering up with Make-A-Wish all month long. You can come in, you can round up to the nearest dollar, all going to charity. Donate $1, $3, or $5. We'll get you $1 off your next visit, a free chip and drink your next visit, or a buy one, get one sub card for your next visit. So we're matching your donations with food offerings. And it all culminates on our day of giving, where we're going to be giving 100% of sales in every Jersey Mike's location countrywide to local charities and really make an impact on our community. We're really excited about this opportunity to serve our communities that, you know, support us in our everyday business. So we'd really appreciate you coming out here and making a difference in a kid's life, really giving them a chance to fight and know that we're here to support them and to keep going. So it's something we feel really strong about. And, you know, we hope that you do too, and you come out and support us.
Well, here in 2020, we hope you're hungry enough to go back to Jersey Mike Subs over and over again, no matter where you're listening to us, because the company's 1,700 locations in this 10th year of the month of giving hope to raise more than $8 million collectively for charities. We appreciate you coming in, Mitch Thompson, as we talk to you about this time every year for this event. He's with Jersey Mike Subs and has a number of restaurants in this area. So thank you for joining us. And let's find out a little bit more about how those donations from Jersey Mike's get put to work with our guest from Make-A-Wish Connecticut. So as we were saying, Make-A-Wish Connecticut believes that a wish experience can be a game changer for a child with a life-threatening medical condition. And it's one belief that guides the organization in everything they do and inspires them to grant wishes that change the lives of the kids they serve. And Make-A-Wish Connecticut has been able to do more of that for these kids thanks to the philanthropy in part that comes through the Jersey Mike's Month and Day of Giving. Kim Smith's on the line. She's Director of Corporate and Community Giving at Make-A-Wish Connecticut. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So first, beyond the introduction, remind folks first how Make-A-Wish Connecticut fits into the larger kind of national global Make-A-Wish movement, and give us a little bit more background on the organization and the most important things that people need to know about how their Jersey Mike Subs Month of Giving and Day of Giving philanthropy is going to make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, our mission being that together we grant life-changing wishes for children with critical illnesses is really stands as I share that with you. And through the partnership with Jersey Mike's, they've had a tremendous impact on not only engaging the community, but also helping us grant wishes to children when they need it most. The community feels really good that they know that they're helping out these children that are directly impacted in their local community. And I think that really shows when, you know, Jersey Mike's opened the doors throughout the month, but also on the day of giving and having our wish kids have these hands-on experiences of rolling up their sleeves and helping make these subs and handing it to their customers saying, thank you for helping wishes like mine come true. It's really amazing to see that impact.
And Connecticut Make-A-Wish, or Make-A-Wish Connecticut, I should say, is an affiliate of a larger movement in Make-A-Wish, right?
Yes, we actually, the Make-A-Wish headquarters is in Trumbull, Connecticut. We have over 60 chapters in the United States, and we have 50 national affiliates as well. Make-A-Wish National America actually is located in Phoenix, Arizona. And this year is pretty exciting for us because Make-A-Wish as a whole is celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. So it's really great to share with the community the great work that they've been doing to grant, you know, all these wishes across and really making a difference in the lives of these children.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of hugs from Mickey Mouse and kisses from dolphins and an unimaginable list of dreams come true, not just nationally, but you guys have done incredible work here in Connecticut. I know it's probably really challenging to say that where the precise dollars that flow into Make-A-Wish Connecticut from Jersey Mike Subs Month and Day of Giving are going. But could you give us an idea, without getting too specific, of two or three of the Make-A-Wish success stories that may in part at least have happened as a result of organizations like Jersey Mike Subs and individuals giving to the organization?
Absolutely. And I share with you that children are impacted between the ages of 2.5 to 18 that are actually eligible for our wishes. And in Connecticut alone, we have granted over 222 wishes this past year. And with the average cost of a wish being $10,000 in Connecticut alone, that's a lot of wishes that we need to grant. And through the support of Jersey Mike's, we're able to do that. Wishes come in all shapes and sizes. We actually have 5 wish types. I wish to go. So that looks like, you know, the trip to go see Mickey to the Walt Disney World Resort, Hawaii, Alaska. I wish to have. Kids have asked for tree houses, a computer, a game room, shopping spree wishes. I wish to be would be an actress or a police officer for the day. I wish to be. Which I just shared with you. I wish to meet would be the Boston Red Sox, meet some of these other celebrities. I wish to give would be, we've had kids that wanted to give back to the hospital they were treated in and go on shopping sprees and bring these amazing systems back into the hospital. Yeah, it's pretty amazing what our kids do. So I can't, all wishes are unique in itself. You know, it takes a lot with the support of the community to make these, rolling out the red carpet for these wishes. So they're all incredible wishes.
Well, I really hope hearing these stories on this program are going to inspire people like it's about to inspire me to go back out and visit Jersey Mike Subs location here close to the station in order to participate. We want to remind people that Make-A-Wish Connecticut is a primary recipient of philanthropy coming out of the 10th annual month of giving from Jersey Mike Subs. This year, they're hoping to raise a record-breaking amount for charity. Jersey Mike Subs campaign culminates in the nationwide event Day of Giving on Wednesday, March 25th, when local Jersey Mike's owners and operators donate their resources and every single dollar that comes into the restaurant from local charities. So if you're not so hungry, still make it a point on Wednesday, March 25th to get at least one meal or perhaps feed your whole family or office at a Jersey Mike store near you, wherever you're listening in the country or here in Connecticut. And in the meantime, if you can patronize the store for the rest of March and can't make it on the 25th, there are still ways that a portion of what you're spending or can round up will also go to these charities, including Make-A-Wish Connecticut. Kim Smith is with us. She's Director of Corporate and Community Giving for Make-A-Wish Connecticut. We also previously chatted with Mitch Thompson from Jersey Mike Subs. Kim, best of luck to you and all of the folks at Make-A-Wish for the great work that you're doing, and we will talk to you again soon. Good luck this year and with the day and month of giving.
Thank you so much. We're truly thankful for your support and, of course, Jersey Mike's. And what we say at Make-A-Wish is the doctors provide the medicine and we provide the magic with the support of our community. We can't thank you enough.
back in Bridgeport, once again, the guest of Joe Carbone, president of The Workplace. It's more than a place. It's more than an agency. The Workplace really is a movement that's defined the concept of Think It Forward. They are developing a well-educated, well-trained, and self-sufficient workforce that can confidently compete in today's changing global marketplace. And we're going to tell you a few ways that they are doing it. Joe, I'm challenged because I would ask you what's new, but the show's only an hour long, we're going to kind of try to keep it in the lane here and talk just about a few of the most important things that are going on. The first of which is something that you were just telling me about. You were at the Capitol this morning for a Platform to Employment graduation ceremony, but you got a chance to put a bug in the ear of a number of lawmakers about a very exciting new program that is so on the cutting edge, it's the only one of its kind, and you're actually working on it with great success in Rhode Island, and it's one of several Platform to Employment initiatives that we're going to be talking about over the next 15 minutes or so. And this one is specifically for individuals who are coming out of recovery for opioid addiction. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a program. I mean, actually, most folks don't realize it, but I think there's probably going to be about 550 to 600 people that will die this year from overdose from opioids. And they go to treatment, and treatment centers do a wonderful job. But I have found really no center in the country where there's an employment component to recovery. So imagine you finish your recovery process, could be a year, could be 18 months, and you come out and you've got to get yourself a job. You've got a resume and you've got this blank period of a year or more on your resume, and employers will ask you the question, well, why is that? And you'll say, well, I was in treatment for addiction, you know, from something like maybe an OxyContin. And immediately they just kind of get disconsidered for employment. So we got a program in Rhode Island, and it was funded by the feds, but it was actually initiated by the governor of the state, who asked us to really do this. We've been doing Platform to Employment in Rhode Island now for about 5 years. And it was to use the structure or concept of Platform to Employment, a market-driven approach to re-employment, to use it for people that were getting released from these treatment centers. We've had great success, I think. I mean, the number of success in terms of who was brought to employment is about 50% of the people that were referred to us. That's not our usual number, but it was the first try. And these are folks that are carrying major barriers to reemployment. And there's something unknown about the addiction side of things. And it makes employers, I think, reluctant to reach out that far. And this program provides them reason to look at it and to say, well, there's kind of a shared risk here in the sense that the workplace is taking part of the risk. They're going to take part of it. It's to give people a chance to really demonstrate that whatever their background might be or whatever their challenge might be, give them a chance to overcome it. And I think we've had a good chance and a good opportunity, and we've got at least a structure to begin to work.
So like a lot of the Platform to Employment templates, this is where the person goes to work for a company, but they're technically not on the payroll?
Yeah, they're not on the payroll. What we do, I think one of the key features to Platform to Employment, once you've been through the training for 5 weeks and you were a good student, you did what you had to do and you learned from it, you got some of your self-confidence back. We dealt with some of the emotional challenges. I think the key part of it is that you go out to an employer and you'd say, we've got candidate A. We think this candidate is ready to go back to work. And they've got skills that are commensurate to what your needs are. You give them a chance. They will be on my payroll, the workplace's payroll, for the next 8 weeks. We will cover the full wage for the job. So it's not anything like a stipend. It's the full wage. You can end the contract after one day, or you can go the full 8 weeks and not make the hire. So we're taking the risk. We want you to give that person a chance. I'm only dealing, by the way, with honorable employers. So if employers are looking for free labor, they're not going to get it here. Right. 95% of the time, by the way, the employers make the hire at the either before the eight-week period or at the eight-week period. So it's a market-driven kind of strategy, and it works. And it works for this group, folks who are suffering from addiction. It works for older people, which is what we're doing in Connecticut. And it has worked for long-term unemployed for a good number of years, even dating back to the Great Recession.
And this was the subject of the graduation ceremony that we're talking about that happened earlier on the day that we're taping this segment. That was the Platform to Employment graduation for the Older Workforce Program. We've talked about that a number of times, and it's not going away because it is so successful. Tell us a little bit about the numbers that you're now kind of ratcheting up on the tote board in terms of people who've been returned to the workforce, many of whom have felt they've hit the wall, hopeless. They ran out of unemployment and they can't get a job. You guys have really changed a lot of lives.
We are already at well over 2,000 people that have come through this program and are still working today. These are people that were unemployed at least long enough to exhaust their unemployment benefits. By the way, most are actually more than 6 months by the time that they get to us. Today we had a graduation, and we had this would be for folks from all over Connecticut. We had 50 graduates that were present, and we had an area of the room that was ripped off, and it had 28 chairs, and these are 28 of the folks from those classes who have already started work. By the way, the graduations are the classes ended anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks ago. So in just a short period of time after class, 28 of 78 we were brought to employment and are now working. So we had them all roped off, and I was very proud to say to this group this morning that my ultimate goal is to come to a PDE graduation, and there isn't a single person in the audience. We're just looking at these yellow papers on chairs. The area is all roped off. I'm still going to give a speech,
sure.
But that's going to be the my top priority.
Well, it certainly sends a powerful message, but the fact that, you know, 40+% in several weeks already couldn't attend their own graduation because they were too busy working is fantastic.
And by the way, let me just add one more point.
Yeah.
The average wage for the classes that we have had in this fiscal year, the one that began on July 1st, is $51,350 a year. That is a fair wage in Connecticut. And that's a wage where you're going to be paying your taxes, your state income taxes. And I can say to legislators every day, as I said this morning to a group of them, that 18 months in that employment, you, the state of Connecticut, you got your money back in state income taxes. So this is an investment. This is not an expense. You're investing in the person, and that person goes to work. It's better for that person, better for the family, and better for the community.
Defined return on investment. Those are ROI is the magic word that everybody wants to hear when it comes to the cost value relationship of trying to train or retrain folks in the workforce. We're here at the workplace in Bridgeport with our president Joe Carbone, and have we got some news for you? If you are a veteran looking to work, change careers, get into the workforce, we're going to come back and talk more with Joe Carbone about a couple of really incredible veterans programs right after this break. Stick with us.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about a number of them through Love CT. And if you run work,
we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. We're here at the workplace in Bridgeport. This mission of this agency is to create a seamless, coordinated system of education, training, and employment. They conduct comprehensive planning and coordinate regional and statewide workforce development programs to prepare people for careers while strengthening the workforce for employers. If you're with us for the first segment of the show, you certainly heard how they're doing that with folks who thought
thought after a certain age they would never get a job again, and more so for people who were gainfully trying to get back into the workforce after recovery from opioid addiction. Now we're going to talk specifically about veterans. And if you're a regular listener to the award-winning For the People, you know how we like to promote Connecticut Advanced Manufacturing. And I couldn't be more thrilled to have walked into my visit with Joe here in Bridgeport and saw a flyer that said military to machinist. Joe, tell me about this program. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, this was an idea actually of Senator James Maroney of Milford. And he called me months ago, and he had this idea about manufacturing because there's an abundance of jobs out there in manufacturing, and some are paying quite well. Places like Sikorsky, which they have lots of orders for years to come, and so it's going to be a very, very busy place for a long time. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the subcontractors to the military contractors are in our region, and there are jobs. And more often than not, and this is really kind of unfortunate, there are jobs and there are not takers. There are not people that are applying for those jobs. Yeah. Or they've got a different view about manufacturing. They think it's all the dark and kind of dirty places to work. Yeah. And that's not the way it is any longer. So we have a lot of veterans that come in and out of our programs. And heretofore or in the past, really, manufacturing has not been a choice area of employment for veterans. And we decided let's try to make this looking a bit better and to do more to promote it. And so we've got this program, and, you know, folks can contact the workplace either by way of our worksite, our website, or they can call here. And we can get them connected to a program that's going to start in just a few weeks. And it's going to be basically a platform to employment, the same kind of a structure, except it's going to be entirely tied to manufacturers. And we've already gone out, and we've gotten lots of manufacturers that are going to work with us. There's a lot of manufacturers and a lot of businesses in general that want to do things really for our veterans. Not just the vets that might be homeless, but other veterans who don't quite know what the next career or the next step is going to be for them. So we're ready, we're prepared, and we're looking for veteran applicants to express to us either their interest in becoming part of the PDE cohort that is more general, or the PDE cohort that is going to be dealing with the machinist and the operators and manufacturing occupations.
Very good. Also, imminently, you're about to launch a new P2E veterans program that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So what kind of variety can veterans explore in terms of career paths in the P2E veterans initiative above and beyond the advanced manufacturing track, if you will, of the military to machinist initiative?
We're kind of fortunate down here where we've got we've got a degree program at Housatonic Community College in manufacturing. You can actually get an associate's degree. You can get certification or licenses to several different steps in manufacturing. So not only do you end up getting something that's going to lead to a job, you've got a track of courses here that will constantly increase your ability to be more and more productive and knowledgeable about your work. Mm. And every step you take in manufacturing, when that happens, guess what? Your wages go up. Mm. Your wages go up, your benefits go up, and your future gets brighter. Your security gets brighter.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're connected with a defense operation like Sikorsky or Electric Boat, by the way, who are now down here actively recruiting for workers that will – it's a good part of the – it's on the rest of the state, good distance from here, but they need a lot of workers. And so this is going to be in part a marketing effort, too, to veterans – to begin to think about this. There are some rich careers in this. Mm.
What other opportunities could you assist veterans in exploring if, for whatever reason, they're not interested in maybe exploring a manufacturing track plan?
Well, on the April 24th, we have a cohort beginning that will be for veterans, and it's going to be the much more generic form of PDE, and it's going to be 5 weeks of classes, but it will be only for veterans, and we're going to have employers from all sectors of the market available. The course itself, in terms of the 5 weeks, is going to be basically the same, but it's what happens after that course. We're going to be dealing with companies that have had some outreach to veterans, offer some special programs for veterans, and we think that through that process, we're going to be, you know, really advancing opportunity for them. So I would ask any of the veterans that might be listening, go to our website, www.workplace.org, or go to Platform to Employment website. So it would be www.platformtoemployment.com. Either one, apply for either program or any program, or call the workplace at 203-610-8500. And you can speak to people here. They can tell you how to do it. They can do it for you. They can get you more info on it.
The one thing that is bothering me, and that is that you hear so much about go volunteer for the military and get a career for life, and with the downsizing of the numbers of people in the military, you have so many fewer people coming out of it looking for work. What are you hearing from these people on the front lines? What is keeping them from coming out of the military and not just being able to cherry pick from a bowl full of different job opportunities? Where are they hitting the wall here so that it can be so challenging for them?
Well, actually, the rate of unemployment for veterans is probably at the lowest it's ever been. Mm. So I think they are making contact. And I think one of the problems is that there's such an abundance of choice. It's almost confusing. Mm. You know, you're in the military for a year or 2 years, and you're abroad in many cases. And you come out, and, you know, sometimes you just need to catch your breath a little bit and take a break and let your mind take you to whatever your next choice might very well be. One of the great parts of Platform to Employment, and this is why I hardly recommend it, the 5 weeks, and you're sitting with a group of 25 people. You're one of 25. So in the course of 5 weeks, you're going to get to know each other very, very well. But it puts some discipline back in one's life in the sense that the classes started at a certain time and ended at a certain time. There's going to be all the services that you need to get back into what interviewing for work is in this time frame, which it changes almost every year. You'll see new and new things that are added. Mm-hmm. If you're away from your career for a year, you know, regardless, even if it was something as noble as being in the armed services, you're away, you've missed a lot. You've got to catch up. You've got to get your self-confidence back. That's what PDE does. And then it puts you in a better frame of mind to decide to pick what course of future occupation that you're looking for. I think that's been the key to success here. It troubles all of us, especially when I see the veterans that are out there, you know, along the roadside, and you know, they're homeless and they're hurting and they're depressed in many cases. But I understand how it could happen. I do. But I think I would beg all of them, please come out. We can help you. We can deal with no matter what the barrier might be, whatever your problem is, and let us try to make some connection to a life, at least from the standpoint of a career that can truly, truly make a difference for you.
Fantastic. Workplace.org is the place to start if you want to explore more information about any of the programs we've talked with Joe Carbone about this morning here. He is president of The Workplace, a very long and dear friend of our program and a great resource over the many years that he's been here and his people have been here on our program. The Workplace believes in the power of ideas to affect great change, and they act as convener, catalyst, collaborator, and advocate for workforce development throughout the region, state, and the nation. If you're a veteran, you're an older worker, if you are coming off of a rehabilitation situation for an addiction, or if you're just looking for a career change or to start your life in the workforce, check out The Workplace. workplace.org, workplace.org, for a path for your own career development. Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we're wrapping up today with a brand new friend and a brand new organization that we hope will be just another one of our countless incredible resources for our listeners and their families. You know, every day kids surprise their families by getting into medicine, and there are more than 47,000 children under age six seen in emergency rooms every year for medicine poisoning. That's five children every hour, and sadly, a number of these cases are fatal. So it was fantastic that I was contacted by Safe Kids Worldwide about a brand new report that they've just released that reveals common misconceptions families have about how to protect children from medicine poisoning, and highlights simple actions they can take to help prevent these calls to poison help numbers, trips to the ER, and fearful, fretful hours spent bedside. We're pleased to welcome Emily Samuel. She's Program Director for Safe Kids Worldwide. So, Emily, thanks for joining us here in Connecticut this morning. Tell us a little bit more about Safe Kids International. Where did it come from historically, and why is it important for our Connecticut listeners to be more familiar with the work you guys do?
Absolutely. I'm happy to be joining you today and sharing more about what we do and some important safety information that parents need to know. Safe Kids Worldwide, we are a global nonprofit. We have about 400 coalitions in the United States, and we partner in more than 30 countries. And our mission is really to share education about how parents and caregivers can keep kids safe from preventable injuries. So things like car crashes and drowning prevention, fire and burn. And today we're talking about medicine poisonings and why medicine safety is important. Next week is National Poison Prevention Week, and with potentially more medicines in the home for cold and flu season, medicine safety is especially important for families with young children. And we know that children are curious, and it's amazing how quickly they learn new skills, especially when they start approaching the age of crawling or climbing and walking. Mm-hmm. And they also understand differently. And sometimes we find them getting into things that they shouldn't, like medicine and vitamins. And it can be very surprising to families.
Sure. So you guys have produced this new report. It's entitled Keeping Kids Safe Around Medicine, Insights and Implications. Is this type of report something that Safe Kids Worldwide does as a regular practice, or is this kind of a new or rare component to the work that you do?
So we've actually had a series of medicine safety reports, each focusing on a different topic area. And this year, we've actually compiled this report, and based on our research and work that our partners have done, as well as focus groups with parents, we put all of that into one report, sharing what we've learned and the most important safety tips parents should know if they have young children in their home.
Great. Well, we're going to ask all those parents, caregivers, and everyone who loves kids and wants to protect them to give us about 8 or 9 more minutes of their time while we run down an important list of 5 things that they need to know. So let me get you started, Emily, with the difference between where medicine is stored and where medicine is kept.
Yeah. So when you think about medicine, most families have a place in the home where they store medicine that they may not use every day, such as maybe a cabinet or a closet. But they may keep medicine that they're using more often in a more convenient location. And they may not be thinking about the safety factor when it comes to young children. We found that kids are getting into medicine in places like purses, nightstands, on counters, and in drawers. And these are places where kids are drawn to explore. So we want to make sure that parents remember to keep medicine out of reach and out of sight And if they are keeping medicine in their purses or briefcases, make sure that those are out of reach as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to admit, I haven't necessarily read the caps on certain medicine bottles over the years correctly for the precise language, but I have had issues and challenges getting into some medicine bottles. So I guess I'd like to talk to you about the difference between child resistant and child proof when it comes to what is capping the medicine.
Sure. So there are medicines that are in childproof containers or child resistant containers and child resistant packaging. And that type of package is intended to slow a child down from opening it, but it's not childproof. And so if you have a curious, persistent child, it's possible that they'd be able to get into it. And that can be very surprising for families and how quickly their little one can get into a child-resistant container. So we urge parents to remember to choose child-resistant packaging when they're able to. And if caregivers are using pill boxes or other containers that are not child-resistant, it's even more important to store those containers out of reach and out of sight.
I guess it's also important for parents to kind of envision what they think their kids can do versus what they believe the kids actually are doing.
Absolutely. We talked about a little earlier about how quickly kids learn new skills. And so one minute they may be crawling, the next minute they're walking. And as they start to explore their environment, you'll find them getting into things that they shouldn't. And so, you know, we want to remind families to keep medicine on their childproofing checklist. So when kids start to learn those new skills and they start learning something for the first time, it's really important to anticipate what they might do next and continue to assess where you're keeping your medicine. And so it may be on the counter, but before you know it, your child's going to be walking and crawling and climbing. So you want to make sure that you get into the practice of making sure your medicines are up and away and out of reach.
So it was probably long before the beginning of recorded time that people were using treats and things like candy to kind of appease or reward children. But it's been a more kind of contemporary situation where candy and medicine are being confused. This is something that's really important to your organization to reinforce.
Yes. To the little explorers that you may have in your home, candy and medicine may look alike. Sometimes for me, it's difficult to tell the difference between candy and medicine. So it's especially important to keep, you know, medicines and vitamins out of reach. And you also have some vitamins that may look like candy. And so you want to make sure that those are up and away. And you don't want to refer to medicine as candy when a child needs to take medicine. And in case there is an emergency or if there's a concern about a child getting into medicine, we urge parents and caregivers to save the poison help number in their phone. And that number is 1-800-222-1222.
Very good. We'll come back and give you that one again in just a few moments. But Emily, to wrap things up, in the top five most important things that you want parents, caregivers, and homeowners to know about keeping kids safe when it comes to medicine, no matter how hard an individual or a family might work, keeping their home in perfect conformity for medicine storage safety, all bets are off as soon as you go visit somewhere else, right?
Right. And so, you know, you may keep things, you know your child best. And so you know what they're capable of and what they might do as a curious child. And so while you may keep medicine out of reach in your home, when you go to another family's home or a friend's home, they might not follow the same practices. And it may be because they haven't had younger kids in the home in several years. And so you want to make sure that you keep an eye out. And sometimes that conversation can be awkward if you're visiting another person's home. But maybe a good way to introduce them to the idea is to say, you know, my child is extremely curious and they love to explore and they have a tendency to get into things that they shouldn't. So, you know, if you have medicine somewhere that's within their reach on a counter or a nightstand or in a purse, would you mind, you know, moving it in a place where they can't reach it or they can't see it?
Great. So we're going to hit the time clock here. We've got about 2.5 more minutes with you, Emily. Can you just give us a quick rundown on the 5 reminders and tips that you would like to impart on people to keep kids safe from getting into medicine?
Absolutely. One, and the most important one, is to keep all medicine and vitamins out of children's reach and sight, even if it's medicine that you take every day. And if you need a reminder of when to take your medicine, we encourage families to write a note or set an alarm on your phone. Choose child-resistant packaging whenever possible. That's number 2. And if someone in your home is using pill boxes or other containers that are not child-resistant, it's even more important to store these out of children's reach and sight. Use reminder tools to help keep track of medicine. So instead of keeping medicine on the counter or on a nightstand, set a reminder on your phone to use a medicine schedule or remember when to give and take medicine. Number 4 is to make sure you keep medicine safety on your childproofing checklist. So as your child learns new skills and becomes more mobile, you're anticipating what you might need to do next and change where you keep medicine to avoid alarming surprises. Mm-hmm. And the 5th is to save the poison help number in your phone and post it visibly in your home for caregivers. And that number is 1-800-222-1222. And they help with poison emergencies and can also answer questions about medicine.
And this is a free, confidential, expert medical contact 24 hours a day. So 800-222-1222, post it on your refrigerator, in each bathroom, perhaps even in your kids' room, and keep it in your phone. Don't forget, National Poison Prevention Week is March 15th through 21st. If you'd like more information and tips on how to protect your children at home, at play, and out in the world, all you need to do is visit safekids.org, where our guest today, Emily Samuel, hangs her hat. She is Program Director for Safe Kids Worldwide. Emily, I really appreciate you taking the time this morning to remind us about this important issue, because every year, almost 50,000 children under age 6 are seen in emergency rooms for medicine poisoning. That's 5 children or more every hour, and sadly, too many of these incidents result in hospitalizations and occasional fatalities. So your resource this morning has been exceptionally important here. We appreciate making your acquaintance and hope to talk to you soon, Emily. Good luck and thanks.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.